The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Knit More Girls podcast, a mother-daughter knitting production. This is a special director's cut episode featuring Barbara Walker with an introduction done by Lisa and Maribel. This episode has been brought to you ad-free from Pearlescence Yarns, nurturing the love of the craft. So let's get to it, shall we?
While we were at Sock Summit, we didn't take classes because taking classes and doing interviews would have been just too much. But our friends did take classes and had the opportunity to attend a class where Barbara Walker was auditing. And we wanted to let them talk about the experience before we play the interview, so you get the full Sock Summit experience about rubbing elbows with these amazing people and then our actual interview. So, enjoy.
So Saturday morning, Maribel and I had a class with Meg Swanson and Amy Denshin, who Amy is the funniest woman in knitting, I swear to you. And Meg is beautiful and sophisticated and very classy. And we were excited. We had our homework. We showed up. We get in there.
But wait, let's back it up a little bit because I need to tell how Lisa hit me. No, she didn't hit me. But we were waiting around for the time to come for us to go to class. And we were sitting around with the Bobbin's Nest girls.
Right.
And Lisa said, we need to get there at least half an hour early because I'm going to sit in the front. I need to sit as close as I can to Meg Swanson. And so I said, okay. So I gave her a time check. Okay, we have this time, we have that time. And I don't know, I think we just lost track of time. And we ended up getting in there about 20 minutes before class rather than your 30 minutes standard that you wanted.
Yes.
And we walk in and the class is full, except for the two seats in the back or two tables in the back or something
like
that.
Yeah, they had like two rows of like two columns of tables.
Right.
And the two back tables were mostly free,
right,
only.
And I had actually told Lisa, oh, don't worry about it. I took a class and they have it U-shaped.
Uh-huh.
So I said, no matter where you sit, you'll have a great view. So we get to the class and she turns around and stabs me with her eyes.
I think I might have smacked you in the arm too.
I think you did smack me in the arm.
Yeah.
And so I was afraid for a little bit. But then she said, no, it's fine. Let's sit down. So we sat down. I did scope out a few seats up front and she was just like, no.
No, we're just here. Just sit here.
Right.
And then the class is getting ready to start and the back door opens, which we were very close to the back door. Also, all their setup is there's four empty chairs in the very back. And those were for the teachers that were going to come in and like audit the classes. You know, people that wanted to just sit in that were teachers, staff members or whatever. And so what happens is the door opens up and this very brightly knitted, you know, black and multicolored sweater comes walking through the door. And as I look to see who's in the sweater, I'm like, oh my God, it's Barbara Walker. And I got chills and Maribel goes, what? I go, no, it's Barbara Walker. I'm whispering now, it's Barbara Walker. And she's like right directly behind me. And Maribel turns and looks. I said, see, that was her. That was her the other day. It's Barbara Walker. She's wearing the same sweater. And it's her mosaic knit sweater because she was teaching mosaic knitting at Sock Summit. So she sits down in the little seats, one of the four seats behind us. And I'm thinking, that's okay. We can sit back here because Barbara's back here with us. So
I think that's when I asked you, hey, there's two seats up there. And you're like, no.
No.
I'm good.
No, I'm good. So it was a little hard to concentrate at first, but I'm like, because I kept kind of wanting to turn and like stare at Barbara, but I didn't, because, you know, I paid for the class. And to be honest with you, Meg Swanson, I've been wanting to take her class, so. And
it was
Amy
a great
is
class.
Yeah, and Amy is just so engaging and she's hilarious. But then Maribel, not even before the break, Maribel had bought Barbara's book, The Crone. Mm-hmm. And she just looked at me and she reaches into her bag very quietly and scoots out of her chair and goes over to Barbara. Oh, goes over to Barbara Walker's bouncer. Because she had like an escort, like, you know, like an extra person. She was supposed to be the class helper. And she was sitting next to Barbara. And you can tell this part, Maribel. You did
it. Yeah. So actually, right before that, I think we were whispering to each other like, oh, my God, it's Barbara Walker. Oh, my God. I can't believe we're this close to her. And going on and on. And Lisa's like, wow, did you ever think you would ever be next to Barbara Walker or in the same room? And at that moment, I don't know what just came over me. I started getting really fast heart palpitations. And so I grabbed my book, and there was the class at that time, I think, was starting to get pretty intense. You know, people were like asking a lot of questions and they were looking at their knitting and, you know,
so
there
Meg
was
and
a
Amy
lot
were
going
distracted
on.
And wouldn't see you doing what you were doing.
Exactly. So I go over to her bouncer. She wasn't her bouncer, but
we fondly referred to her as her bouncer. Yeah.
So I said, you know, would it be terribly rude if I asked Barbara Walker to sign this book? And I said, you know, I know we're in the middle of class and, you know, people are, you know, kind of into what they're doing. So do you think it would be okay? She's like, oh my gosh, yes. You know, she's great. She's, you know, very approachable. And she's like, here. And she turns over to Barbara Walker. She's like, this young lady would like to know if you could sign her book. She goes, well, here, why don't you ask her? And so I said, you know, would you please sign my book? And she's like, yeah, of course, of course. So she looks at the book. She goes, oh, The Crone. Like she was remembering, I don't know, maybe when she wrote, I don't know. And so she, you know, asked me my name. And I said Maribel. I showed her how to spell it from my badge. And she signed it. But the thing about Barbara Walker that I found is when she's talking to you, it's very... it's almost intense because she really looks at you, mm-hmm. you know, she looks you in the eye mm-hmm. and, you know, she, as she's talking to you, well, she was talking to me, she like put her hand on my arm, mm-hmm. you know, and I said, oh, you know, thank you. And she was like, oh no, it's, you know, my pleasure. And she's looking at me, you know, and her hand on my arm. So it was just, it feels very, personable. Or personal, sorry. And so I went to go sit down and I grabbed Lisa's arm and I said, feel my heart.
She did. She did. And I felt her up in class and her heart was about to jump out of her shirt. Yeah.
And I was shaking and I was just like, wow. And Lisa, she's like, did you just like just do that? I'm like, I don't know. I just got up and I just went for it. And so that's how that happened.
Well, and then I'm sitting there and we're still going in class and I'm thinking to myself, God, I hope Jasmine gets that interview. God, I hope Jasmine gets that interview. I hope Barbara's like confirms and everything's okay. Cause if I don't get her to sign my book and get a picture with her, I'm going to pass out. I'm going to be upset. So, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I love Jasmine and everything, but I'm not going to count on her to get a picture with Barbara Walker. So as soon as we broke, I grabbed my camera and I grabbed Maribel and I said, let's go. And I went over to, because I knew this was going to be my opportunity. And I went over to her and I said, hi, Barbara. I said, my name's Lisa. I said, would you mind terribly if I took a photo with you? And she says, oh, why, sure. I'm moving the chair and getting comfortable and everything. And I was okay, you know, and I took a picture with her. I smiled and then Maribel got in and she got her picture and stuff. And, cause you know, I just had this bad sense. I'm like, she's going to get busy. Something's going to happen. And Jasmine's not going to get that interview. And I'm going to regret missing my opportunity. And So then as soon as we were done taking the pictures, I kneel down in front of her, and I'm all okay until I kneel down in front of her. And like Maribel says, when she talks to you, she looks you right in the eye. And I said, you know, I have to tell you, you are the sole reason why I came to Sock Summit. And as I finished the word Sock Summit, my voice is getting shaky. And all of a sudden, just this emotion fills up inside of me. And I started crying. Like, not like sobbing outwardly, but tears were filling my eyes. And my voice was shaky. I started shaking. And I thought, oh my God, I'm losing it in front of Barbara Walker. And I said, and I'm going to go now because I'm starting to cry. And she reached out and touched my arm. And she goes, oh, like that. And I bolted out of the room. Bolted. And because I was embarrassed, you know, I'm like, I'm getting emotional over taking a photo and having just an few exchange of words with her. And I cannot believe I'm getting this emotional. But, you know, she's a huge knitting icon. And, you know, and when I called my significant other and told him, he kind of laughed at me. And he was, I cannot believe you cried. And I said, wait a minute. If you met Tiger Woods, you would cry. He goes, well, maybe I wouldn't cry, but I hear what you're saying. I said, Barbara Walker, to me, is your Tiger Woods. He goes, okay, I perfectly get it. So that was all well and good. And you know, Maribel and I just thought we were just the bomb for the rest of the day. And, you know, we had our stuff and whatnot. Well, yeah. I was nervous and, you know, a nervous Nelly about the whole thing. And then we finally hear that Jasmine gets the confirmation from Barbara, and we were like, cool. You know, well, I had a 9 o'clock class the next day, and the meeting was at 10. And, you know, Chrissy Gardner, if you're hearing this, I love you. I think you're a great designer. But I skipped your class because
not only did you skip it, but
I not only skipped her class, I was just willing to just dump the $70 for the class that I paid. But we were out to dinner with some nice folks, and I said, if you want my class, just buy my dinner. So I sold Chrissy Gardner's class for a seafood dinner and a beer. And I was all okay with that. Ben is the guy who bought the class, and he enjoyed it very much. But yes, nothing was going to stop me from seeing Barbara Walker. Nothing. Nothing. So, you know, we all got up nice and early and got all cleaned up and got down there. And fast forward to the moment to where we were all trying to take deep breaths. Now, I have to say, I am glad that I met her briefly the day before. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't want to be sitting in Barbara Walker's room crying the whole time. And right. I would have.
It took the edge off.
It did. It took the edge off. I got all my emotion out because it was kind of like, yo, Barbara, after that.
Yo, Babs.
Yeah. It took the edge off of the enormous, you know, history and wealth of knowledge that she was going to give us. And just being in her presence and stuff. So it was, I'm really thankful. But when she opened that door and she saw all five of us and she says, oh my, there's a lot of you. I almost thought, oh my God, we're not going to get the interview. She's going to shut the door.
I was so glad I was carrying the microphone because at least I had the excuse. It's like, yeah, I'm a roadie, you know. So, I'm holding equipment.
I wasn't holding nothing but her books. I came there. I had a mission. Because I didn't have my books with me when we went to... We weren't expecting her to show up in Meg's class.
Right. No, we weren't.
Oh, and the thing about Meg's class, I have to tell you, Meg Swanson stops and we talking about the pattern and everything. And this was just like the sweetest moment. It made Amy Denshin cry. She said, you know, Barbara, I have to ask you. She's talking across the room. She goes, are you the one that really invented SSK? And she says, and Barbara's answer was, well, I didn't know of anybody else that was doing it before. And so she goes, well, there you go. And Amy Denshin goes, Barbara Walker invented SSK. And then she started to cry. The whole room clapped. I mean, and Barbara's, you know, sitting back there all very humble. You know, I think she got a little red faced and got very humble about it and stuff. And so it was a fun event to be in. It was a nice little history yeah. little
It was thing. Nice because they kind of, you know, they had a little chit-chat, you know, between them during the class at, you know, at certain times, like the SSK. What was the other thing that that Meg asked her? That they had another...
Well, one of the students had said something about a picture.
Oh, right. Yeah, and, they talked about the picture.
And it was a picture of Meg's mother, Elizabeth mm-hmm. Zimmerman, and Barbara Walker mm-hmm. and Mary Walker Phillips. And that she was describing where the picture was taken, and it was actually taken at Barbara's house. And that picture's printed, I know of, in the Opinionated Editor. I think it might yeah. be somewhere else.
But. And a person that was in the class, a woman that was in the class, had scored, because I guess not all copies of that book have that picture. And she was at Powell's the day before, and she found a used book, that book that had the picture in it.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that certain editions or reprints didn't have the picture.
And they were saying how it was being sold on eBay for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody walked into Powell's and bought the book.
And there it was.
Yeah.
So nice.
So, fast forwarding back to Barbara Walker and walking into our room, she, you know, she was surprised to see us all and we all filed in. Oh, but when she opened the door and she said, "My, there's a lot of you." I don't remember exactly what Jasmine said, but when there was a pause, I said, "And I promise not to cry this time." And she looked at me and she remembered that it was that I cried when I saw her the other day. And she goes, "Oh, okay." And we all filed in and got comfortable. And Jasmine set up the mics and the equipment. And we all chit-chatted and pictures were taken. And Maribel took a spot on the floor. And
I think I had the best seat in the house.
You did have the best seat in the house because you were almost directly at her feet.
Right. And it was great sitting there and just... listening to her because, you know, she's very concise in her responses and, you know, she gives you a lot of information and I couldn't stop staring at her.
she's mesmerizing because you mm-hmm. don't want to stop staring at her because you're thinking to yourself, you don't want to miss one second of right. what she's saying. And if you're looking outside or looking at something mm-hmm. else or looking down at your knitting, which I don't think any of us even were knitting while
no.
we were talking to her.
I didn't even take it out.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is that you don't want to miss anything she says, but she has so much to offer other than even knitting.
Right. And I think that's what had me most mesmerized is just everything that she's done. You know, I think most people, you know, probably listening know about the knitting. And even other books that she's published, you know, about feminism and such. But even in addition to that, just other things that she's done, other things that she's involved in. And this is just the little tidbit that she shared with us. And, you know, but can you imagine how much more there is?
I can see her. She's got a wealth of information and knowledge mm-hmm. and she researches very well. And, mm-hmm. You know... the fact that she sat down in the library, would she say she sat down in the library and like copied off every single knitting book and pattern and stitches and started like collecting them. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, she's like, "I did it just because I wanted to do it."
Right.
And, you know, yeah, that's how she approaches everything. If she right. wants to do it, she just does it. Actually, I think Nike owes her money. She's the original "just do it" commercial. I mean, really, I mean, she's interested in something and, she just does it.
Right. I think that that's, I don't want to give too much of the interview away. So I'll talk about what I had asked her after the interview, which was, you know, she talked about her fairy tales, her feminist fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just really intrigued by that. And I was like, "Oh, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about that?" And she's just like, "You know, it's just something that I wanted to do. It's, you know, there are these fairy tales and they always is the damsel in distress and the princess that gets saved and the prince is the hero." So she said, "Well, I want a different type of fairy tale. I want it from the woman's point of view." And so she talked about her, I don't know, I think it was like Barbie or something that, ended up going out with G.I. Joe instead of Ken. And, you know, they were at the toy store or something like that. And Lisa says, "I think you should write
Pixar
Because it sounds a whole lot like Toy Story.
Pixar, Toy Story?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Pixar owes her money because I think she wrote Toy Story or the basis of the base model of Toy Story.
Yeah. But that, I mean, just how many times do you see something, maybe read something or experience just anything and you're not 100% happy with it? But, you know, and I'll speak for myself, but I don't do anything about it. You know, I just, you know, that wasn't that great. She always seemed to do something about it. And I think even with knitting, it's kind of why she wrote these knitting books, because, you know, she's like, oh, there aren't, you know, all the patterns are all over the place and I would really, you know, like something. Or, I mean, I don't know what her thought process was, but I would imagine it could be something like that. And I'm just going to go and do it. You know, I would never do that. I would just complain about it.
She gets so much done in her lifetime that is enough to fill up, you know, the average two or three people's lifetime.
Right.
She just has, you know.
The woman doesn't sleep.
Yes. And that was one interesting thing that she said, that she, and she said it in the Luminary panel too, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
Because having spent that little bit of time with Barbara before the Luminary panel, when we got to the Luminary panel, I understood her even better.
Right.
When she was speaking about certain things. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, it was almost, Sunday I was walking on clouds for the rest of the day after, you know, our time with Barbara in her hotel room. And then, which was not a seedy thing. It was chit chatting.
Barbara, because it was more private.
Right. Yes. It was a very private setting and we all were sitting very close and, you know, and it, you know, she was talking to just us and, very concise, very, and you know that we could have probably sat there for much longer and talked much longer, but we didn't want to impose too much time on her. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying we very loosely, Jasmine and Gigi, the Knitmore girls, we were just, you know, flies on the wall, but happy to be little flies on the wall. You know, it was almost scary because, you know, Jasmine says, well, you guys have any other questions? Well, I don't know how much of the extra stuff, because we started chatting even more and I think the audio went off. I had pointed out while we were in the class with Meg Swanson's class, and we noticed Barbara was knitting on something, and I don't know if Jasmine got this on audio, but she was knitting on some pinkish, mauvish colored yarn, and I didn't really see what it was. I didn't ask. And so then when we were sitting there, I looked down at her feet, and what is she wearing? She's wearing the same color yarn that she was knitting on. I said, are those the socks that you were knitting on in class? She goes, well, yes, they are. They're my Sock Summit socks. So she had knit those and just finished them the night before, and then she was wearing them. So it was really cute.
Which was from repurposed yarn.
Yes, it's from a sweater. Yeah, it was from a sweater that she unraveled and decided and rewound the yarn up and made socks. So I think that was kind of cool. She was reusing a old yarn.
I almost felt a little bit silly afterwards because I think we were starving. And so we were talking about grabbing some breakfast. So I said, you know, did you want to grab some breakfast? She's like, oh, I ate breakfast ages ago. And I remember that. That's right. She gets up at 5 in the morning, you know. It's like we're there at 10. Her bed is made, which I'm sure she made. And, you know, it wasn't maid service that came in. And she's finished knitting her socks that she started, like, you know, a couple days ago. Pattern socks, even.
They were not even stocking it. Plain vanilla. They had a pattern to them. Yeah, and that was kind of fun.
I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. You're Superwoman.
Yeah, she only getting 4 to 5 hours sleep. You do tend to get a lot done if you can function on 4 to 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Well, and she's just so efficient. I mean, you know, she talks about, I think she said in the Luminary panel that her TV broke and she just didn't get it fixed until like 5 years later or something.
Took her 5 years to call a repairman.
Yeah. And so I can imagine, you know, it's, she doesn't watch any or very little television. And I think, you know, what did she say? She just got a computer a couple years ago. So, you know, she's an incredibly efficient woman and uses her time wisely, which I think She said that in the luminary panel. She said, you know, you have X amount of hours in the day. Just, you know, somebody had asked, like, how do you do it all? And she's like, just use your time wisely. I mean, it's really as simple as that.
Yes, she's, I even offered to, like, drop everything and move to Sarasota and be her whatever. And I would have. And she was, you know, she just kind of laughed and, you know, thought that was, she was surprised, really. What really struck me is I don't really believe, understood before Sock Summit what an impact that she's had on the knitting industry, knit designers, people coming into knitting that get introduced to her and start to really grasp the wealth of information that she's collected and put out there for the knitting world. I just don't think that she really understood her knit celebrity until she came to Sock Summit. I know she knows that she's an accomplished author to some degree, very humble about it, but I don't think that she understood what emotion that she was going to invoke in people when she showed up.
Right. Because I think to her, you know, like you said, she doesn't realize just the impact that she's made in the knitting world. I think, you know, what did I say? It's like with knitting, it was like she, you know, I came, I conquered, I got the t-shirt, you know what I mean? Right. And in her case, you know, I wrote the books.
Right. Right.
So I think that's, you know, again, I think it's just, a glimpse into the type of person that she is that, you know, this is just one thing that she's done well. And, you know, can you imagine all the other things that she's accomplished in her life that, you know, we just don't know about? You know, we know about knitting, but there's, I imagine, so much more.
Well, and there was a couple of, through the grapevine comments that I had heard, that she had mentioned to one of the other, one of the organizers that she wasn't really sure if anybody was going to know who she was, which is laughable to us, but you know, she was being very serious. And, when we were in Meg's class and, after we took a photo, of course I grabbed my camera and had to get a photo with Amy and had to get a photo with Meg. And after I took the picture with Meg, I had told Meg, I said, you know, honestly, Barbara Walker and Meg Swanson were the reason I went. Barbara Walker being number one, Meg Swanson being number two. And I told Meg Swanson that she was a huge reason why I came. And I said, and it was, and that her and Barbara were the reasons I came. And she said, and isn't it lovely that we're both here in the same room together today? I said, it is. And Meg said to me directly, she said, you know, Barbara wasn't going to come. But she said, Meg, if you go, I'll go too. And Meg had said to me, how could I deny, you know, this many knitters that congregate to come to this, the chance to meet Barbara Walker?
Yeah.
So I said, really? She says, yeah. But honestly, I think, you know, Barbara might have been a little, not apprehensive, but I don't think apprehensive is the right word, but she might have not really thought the impact that she was going to have. But I think when she left, I think it was a great time for her. I think she had a really wonderful time. I think, you know, with all of the huge knitting icons that showed up and everybody in the same room, I think she knew she was a part of something that was huge, part of history. And you could see it on her face. You know, you could see the enjoyment that she was having, on her face, during the time that we talked to her and during the time, at the luminary panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she had a great time. And I think, just reading other people on Ravelry, just their comments of interactions that they had with Barbara, you know, I read somebody in an elevator and somebody else when, she was sitting eating breakfast, you know, kind of had the same, reaction that you did.
The crying reaction.
Right.
We're going to talk about the tattoo.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay.
And then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Okay. So really quickly, the tattoo story. The tattoo story started off with, it started off still in San Jose at the crack of dawn when we got on the airplane, and we were joking about, you know, because we were fairly confident we were going to see Barbara Walker and have an interview with her. And like I said, we loosely, the Knitmore girls. I said, oh, I brought my books. I'm going to have her sign my books. And I said, I'm getting my picture taken with her. If, you know, if that's the last thing I do. And
all your declarations.
All my declarations. And I said, you know what? If Barbara signs my books, maybe I'll just have her sign a part of my body and I'll get it tattooed permanently. And that kind of, you know, it was silly at first. And then, you know, over lunches and dinners and breakfasts, and we all kind of joked and laughed about it again. And when it came down to it, I was like, well, maybe I would. Maybe I would do that. You know, where? And I'm like, oh, maybe my ankle, my foot or something. We even speculated where it was going to be, if she'd do it. You know, we were going on and on. And it got to be quite the little joke. So the interview's over. It's all wrapping up. We're chit-chatting. And Barbara signs a bunch of book plates. And I had my books. And I politely came to her and I said, would you mind signing my books? And she's all done signing my books, you know, to my name and everything. And then Jasmine leans in and says, so Lisa, isn't there something else that you want Barbara to sign? Barbara still has the permanent felt tip marker pen in her hand. And she looks at me like, well, bring it to me. And I said, I looked at Jasmine like, you're going to die. Cause now there's an inside joke that Barbara's not part of. And I had to explain to her really quickly. And I said, which I don't do anything really quickly. So I said, Barbara, I said, we kind of all been joking about, me getting a tattoo of your autograph. And she just goes, oh, she just laughed and goes, oh my, and still had the pen in her hand.
Like she's waiting. Okay, where?
Well, show me. Give it to me. Honestly, I really think she would have done it. I really do. I just don't think that... I didn't know how to come home with a Barbara Walker signature tattoo on me. I don't know how I was going to explain that later in my life. I didn't know how I was going to explain it to my significant other walking through the door. But, you know, in hindsight, I'm kind of regretting not doing it. we can scan a book plate and maybe make it happen. But, yeah, we'll have to see about that.
And now, without further ado, this is Barbara.
This morning, we're sitting down with Barbara Walker, epic knitter. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. I'm enjoying myself at Sock Summit. Given lots of talks and seen lots of people so far.
Well, let's get right into the meat of it. And how did you get started knitting? How did this all happen?
Actually, I didn't learn to knit till I was 35. Mm-hmm. When I was an undergraduate at the University of Pennsylvania, a sorority teacher tried to teach me to knit. Mm-hmm. At that time, all the girls were making Argyle socks for all their boyfriends. This was back in the Neolithic period, you may remember. Well, you won't remember, you're too young. But anyway, she tried to teach me to knit, and I made this horrible, horrible little swatch full of holes and dropped stitches, and I said, this is absolutely hopeless, I will never learn to knit. Mm-hmm. And I threw it away, and I never went back. And then, I never learned from my family. My mother never did any needlework to speak of, nor my grandmother, nor any of my female relatives. But after I got married, I decided I wanted to learn to make clothes. So I bought a sewing machine and learned to use that and made all my clothes. My husband and I were into square dancing at the time, so I made the fancy Western shirts for him and the matching dresses for myself. Mm-hmm. And we were so into it. We were so chic. And then I thought, well, maybe I should make some sweaters. Now, ever since I had been married, it had been my custom to give myself a course in something every winter. Mm-hmm. I would go to the library and I'd get all the books on my chosen subject and I would make notes and really give myself a course. And in that way, I studied astronomy and architecture and paleontology and geology, one each year, mm-hmm. one each season, and a number of other things. And then this winter when I was 35, I thought, well, maybe this year I'll seriously study knitting. Mm-hmm. So I got a little Bernat Learn to Knit book, and I studied it, and I followed the directions, and I learned to knit. American style. Mm-hmm. And I made the first and only sweater that I ever made following someone else's directions. Mm-hmm. And it was a plain stockinette sweater. And while I was in the process of doing it, I thought, boy, this is boring. I'm doing the same motion over and over thousands and thousands of times. It just drove me crazy. I thought, well, if it's that tiresome, I maybe won't do it. And then I picked up a couple of knitting magazines and saw that there are different kinds of fabric patterns that can be done in knitting. Mm-hmm. And that was a light bulb. I thought, wow, now I want to learn to do all these different patterns. So I got a whole bunch of knitting magazines and I copied them all out. And I kept collecting and collecting, and I got Mary Thomas's book, and I got, you know, wherever I could find James Dorbury. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the Library of Congress in Washington and went down into their stack permission and went down and looked at all the knitting books they had back to the year 1830. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Library of Congress stacks at that time, you have these huge bookshelves, 10-foot ceiling, and way up in the very top of the ceiling is a little 25-watt light bulb. And the floor is the only place to sit, and it's dirty. Mm-hmm. And I sat there for 3 days, and I copied all the knitting patterns I could find in all those books. My first treasury of knitting patterns was taken up by Scribner's, because they had a series of books on needlework. They had one on crochet, they had one on embroidery, mm-hmm. One on quilting. They didn't have anything on knitting. So when I offered them this collection of knitting patterns, they jumped at it. But that was only the bare beginning, because I still had lots and lots of patterns. And I did a second treasury of knitting patterns. And at that time, I was also inventing, beginning to create my own patterns. Mm-hmm. So then that was followed by the third treasury, which was originally entitled Charted Knitting Designs. And that incorporated the charting system that I invented to show the way the pattern looked in the fabric on a chart. Mm-hmm. So you could see the fabric and see the chart at the same time. Well, I don't think there's any standard charting method, but this one came right out of my brain, and some of it has been adapted today. So then there was a fourth treasury, which was first called sampler knitting. Mm-hmm. And all of the designs in the third and fourth treasuries were my inventions. They were originals. And then came knitting from the top, which was my method of designing garments from the top down. Mm-hmm. And the Learn to Knit Afghan book, which actually I undertook because most American knitters did not know how to do continental, they didn't have directions for doing continental style. Mm-hmm. And I liked continental style so much, I thought someone should be teaching it. Mm-hmm. So in that book, I gave instructions for beginning knitters to learn continental style. And then I also made a little swatch, or patch rather, mm-hmm. of every conceivable knitting type. We had one for mosaic patterns, one for cables, one for lace, several of each kind. And by the time you did all the swatches, you would have made an Afghan. So this was my idea for teaching beginners. Let them actually do something, make something, you know. Fiddling around with little swatches or boring stockinette is not my idea of learning. So that was basically my knitting career. And after that, I turned to other kinds of books, feminist-type books, and started on a whole new career, I guess you could say. The first in that series was The Woman's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets, mm-hmm. which is a great big, more than 1,100-page book, that I actually worked on, did the research for 25 years. I started on that right out of college and never quit taking notes. And I had written it several ways to begin with, as a sort of prose research project. But it just, everything interlocked so much that it got very complicated. So I thought the only way to really do it is alphabetize and make an encyclopedia of it, which I did. And that was published to great acclaim. It's still in print after, 25 years? And then that was followed by the Woman's Dictionary of Symbols and Sacred Objects, for which I did all the artwork. Then I also did a book on the tarot, and I designed a tarot deck, the Barbara Walker Tarot Deck, which was published by U.S. Games. And I did some more paintings for the I Ching of the Goddess book, which was packaged with the card deck. And let's see, what else? I did an autobiography called The Skeptical Feminist. I did a little book on the comparative mythology theme called The Crone, Woman of Age, Wisdom, and Power. Crone being an ancient word for an elder, a tribal elder, and it's related to the word crown. It used to mean someone in power, a grandmother who ran the tribe. My husband tells me that I've been waiting all my life to be a crone, and I finally made it. But that book was possibly even more popular than the encyclopedia because it's a quick read and it has a lot of salient facts. And let's see. Restoring the Goddess was another book about the goddess movement. What else? I know I'm leaving something out.
Feminist fairy tales.
Oh, yeah, feminist fairy tales. I did do two works of fiction. One was a novel called Amazon, which is now out of print, and one was short stories called Feminist Fairy Tales, which is not out of print. Okay, now I must be forgetting something.
Well, where was the transition between writing knitting books and writing about feminism?
There was no transition. I was working on the feminist theme always, and the knitting just kind of went along with it. For a while, I was designing for Yarn Company booklets for about 8-10 years. Then I found out that they were taking the garments that I made for the design and selling them for 10 times what they were paying me. And that was the end of my designing. I did not wish to be exploited anymore.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted to talk about the intertwining of knitting and feminism, if you have any opinions on that or anything to say about...
I don't really think they intertwine. Okay. I think they're separate fields. However, since women are almost always involved in the fiber arts historically... I mean, that's kind of a tenuous connection, but you could call it a connection. Okay. I'm interested in symbols of all kinds, which is why I branched out into the tarot and other visual things. But knitting, there was a time, I understand, in the Middle Ages when women were not allowed to knit commercially. The knitting guilds were controlled by men. And so, traditionally, in European tradition, men have been more knitters, more often knitters than women, which I was surprised to hear. I didn't, well, you know, you take over everything lucrative.
And then we wanted to ask you about what your favorite moment at the Sock Summit was, because you've hit all of our other questions, because you were amazing.
Oh.
Do you have a favorite moment or a few favorite moments?
A few favorite. Well, when they were introducing all the teachers and everybody stood up for me, that was a windfall. I didn't expect that. And giving the talk, giving the lecture about how I became a knitter, that was fun because there were lots of interesting questions from the audience. And it was a lovely audience. They were very, very kind.
Excellent. So. How cool. Do you guys have any questions?
Chloe has a very good question. So as a designer, this is a pretty important question for me, where I find inspiration in Stitch dictionaries. How should a designer go about crediting the stitch they found? Should they call the publisher? Should they just say where they found it? What are your feelings on that as somebody who's curated and designed so many stitches?
A credit line.
Credit line.
From so-and-so book by Barbara G. Walker. The copyrights apply to the text of all the books, so you cannot quote the words directly. But the design, the patterns are obviously in the public domain for you to use. Would be any point in publishing them and saying, now you can't use this. So, but as long as you don't quote the words exactly and put in a credit line, you're totally safe.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you.
And then I have one more question, actually. So you've done all of this compilation and research, and every year you were doing something, and somehow I don't think you're just sitting around doing nothing. What are you working on now?
Oh, well, I'm into several things. I collect minerals. I'm secretary of the local mineral club where I live in Florida. I have been doing sermons for the local Unitarian Church. I've done about 30 of those so far. I'm putting those together in an essay book. I also collect tarot decks. I have many, many of those. I am basically a collector and an obsession follower. And my other obsession now is jigsaw puzzles. I collect those also.
Awesome.
So my house is full of stuff. When we moved out of New Jersey to Florida, I thought, I'm not going to have stuff anymore. I'm going to clear out. We're going to live in a smaller space. And I did. I got 400 pounds of books, my husband's papers and journals, all kinds of things. But the stuff is piling up again. Mm-hmm. It tends to do that when you're a collector.
Yeah. Did you have a background in library sciences?
Because no.
Okay. What's your educational background?
Just a BA.
Just a BA in?
Journalism.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I worked as a reporter.
That explains all of the digging and fact-checking.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Terrific. Any other questions?
I would love to know what you like to knit now.
I don't knit.
Well, you made those socks.
Well, that only because I was here. Especially Sock Summit socks. They're not awesome.
My hands are busy with jigsaw puzzles right now.
Well, I walk around barefoot and I wear t-shirts. I live in Florida.
Yeah.
I have 45 sweaters that I never wear. So.
Okay. And then who do you look up? Do you have any knitters that you looked up to when you were kind of collecting? And I mean, you mentored Richard Rudd and Robert Rudd?
No. Richard James Rudd. Norbury.
James Norbury, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Well, those were the only two patterned books I had to deal with, Mary Thomas and James Norbury. There weren't any others at the time that I knew of. And then, of course, once my book started to be published, I got Elizabeth Zimmerman contacted me, and we got to be writing buddies and met a couple of times. Elizabeth came to my house once along with Mary Walker Phillips, who is now also deceased. And there was a picture taken of the three of us, which has been published in several places. You might want to put that picture up on your
website. Absolutely, I'll dig it up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
So, do you see Meg very often?
Actually, this is only the second time I've seen Meg.
Huh.
Meg and I agreed to come here. I said, if you come, I will. So we both came. And I think we're very glad we both did.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. We'd like to thank show sponsors, Pearlescence Yarns, our supporters, and most importantly, you, our listeners. Absolutely everything we've talked about in this week's episode can be found at the show notes, which are located at knitmoregirls.blogspot.com, and you can send your comments, questions, and feedback to us at knitmoregirls@yahoo.com. Happy New Year.
This is Barbara,
Jasmine,
and Gigi,
telling you to knit more.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.